Welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. We're professionals here. Our next guest is Michelle Close. I was going to ask, is it? It's Close, right?
Klaus.
It's Klaus, like Klaus Barbie? Okay,
yes.
Fantastic. Glad we started off on the right foot. Our next guest is Michelle Klaus. She's the assistant director of the Central Music Academy in downtown Lexington, providing free musical training to financially disadvantaged kids in Lexington, Kentucky. It's kind of the theme that we're rolling with today. How are you doing, Michelle?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming in. So we really wore out the good name of CMA a couple of weeks ago when Major Heron of EA Loud was in here representing the Kentucky Music Showcase. How did that turn out?
It was great. We had a wonderful time. We got to come out on a Saturday. We were down at the 700 block of Bryant Avenue where the night market is held. And they had two different stages down there with different artists getting to perform, all local artists, kind of up-and-coming artists. So they had a great variety of music, all different genres. And we were down there. We had a drum circle kind of going on. We had brought out some djembes, and we're just giving out information about CMA and what we do and kind of telling the community about it. So it was a great event.
You think it'll be replicated?
Yes. I've already talked to the guys over at EA Loud about next year's event, and they've got some new ideas and are already planning for it. I don't know how they put it all together this year. They were superstars.
Does the Central Music Academy partner with many different organizations like that in Lexington?
We do. We have partnerships with a lot of different organizations. We've worked with the Fayette County Public School System. We've worked with like the East End Association, the Salvation Army, Lexington Philharmonic Orchestra, the EKU Center for the Arts, all pretty much all the different arts organizations in town we have some kind of partnership with.
Maybe we should talk more holistically about what CMA does in case anybody missed the show last week or is not familiar with it. What specifically does music training for disadvantaged kids look like?
Well, when we started the program, we wanted to really give kids the opportunity to get involved with music as kind of an outlet. And it has kind of flourished into different things that we weren't really expecting necessarily. It's been really able to give the students an outlet that they may not have before to be able to compete against other students who are in their bands and orchestras. So some of the students that they, you know, in orchestra who have first chair have been getting private lessons for years. And, you know, somebody comes in fifth grade and says, hey, I want to learn how to play the violin. And so then they're competing against kids who have been playing the violin for a number of years. And so it's been really exciting to have our students who start taking lessons and come into their lesson and say, all right, I've really got to learn this piece of music because I'm going to challenge the kid who's in first chair and, you know, try and move up in my section. So that's been really exciting to kind of see that transformation of the student and kind of take them being excited about it and really making it into something that they're committed to.
I mean, you talk about private lessons, you're kind of highlighting the socioeconomic disparity there within music education, right?
Right, and music education can be so expensive, as I'm sure you know, and so that can really leave out a lot of kids, even if they are getting it in school, that they may not be getting the one-on-one attention. So if they're in their band class and, you know, the teacher can't help them work on a certain technique that they may be struggling with, then they can come into the private lessons and really be able to get that technique down so that they don't fall behind. Or on the flip side, if they, you know, are really gifted at their instrument and they say, you know, I want to be learning more, you know, what else can I be learning? Then that's an opportunity that the teacher can say, all right, we've got your school music down. Now let's work on this other music that you're really excited about to try and get them kind of more experience and whatnot as well.
Michelle Klaus, Assistant Director of the Central Music Academy. You can find out more information by going to centralmusicacademy.org. But for, like, infrastructure, right, are we talking about classrooms? Is there one-on-one training available through CMA? Like, what specifically does the training, how does that take place?
Sure, yes. We have, they are weekly private lessons. So the student comes in and works with the instructor one-on-one each week. We do 40 lessons a year, so it's kind of an ongoing thing. And once they're in the program, they can stay in until they graduate. We work with kids until they turn age 18. So as long, we do have a lot of kind of strict requirements that the students have to follow. They have to be practicing. They have to be attending lessons regularly. They have to be doing outreach performances where they go out into the community and perform. And then we also do solo recitals at the end of the year that are mandatory as well.
We just had in Elias Gross and Ann Hess of the Valera String Quartet. They're two of the educators over there at the CMA. How do they end up becoming, taking on like a mentorship role as well as just being simply the instructor?
They do. And I think that's one of the really neat things about our program is that our students can come in and they, you know, are starting to work on their instrument, but then they see somebody else who has, you know, been studying this and has been doing this as part of their career, and then they can see a professional doing it, and it really does become a mentor relationship, not only on the instrument, which is, of course, you know, what we kind of do, but in so many different other aspects of their lives, where sometimes students will, you know, be having a hard time maybe at home or at school, and the teacher steps in and says, you know, why don't we talk about this today during, you know, part of our lesson, and just kind of try and work that out, so that that's something that fosters that mentor relationship in other aspects outside of just music as well, because they do see them every week, year to year, and really do kind of grow in a friendship that way too.
Yeah, I'm sure it becomes part of a, like an extended family member, right?
It does. And when we actually like to, we kind of pride ourselves on saying that we are kind of like a family community that, you know, the not just between the students and the teachers, but the teachers between teachers, and then also the parents and the siblings. We do have a waiting room. And so when the families come in and, you know, maybe one son goes off to take their violin lesson, but they have two other younger children, then they'll wait down in the waiting room and, you know, the kids will be playing. We have a little play area, and then the parents start talking to each other and say, oh, you know, is your son, you know, doing the KMEA coming up? And, oh, yeah, they're going to be doing that, even if they aren't at the same school, you know, things like that. Or, oh, did you hear, you know, that there's this opportunity to be performing? Are you guys going to be out there? And so it's really kind of a neat experience to be walk through the waiting room and not only hear the students playing, but also hear the parents kind of chatting back and forth as well.
How many students and how many teachers do you have?
We have about 100 students who come in for the private lessons, and we have about 30 teachers that teach the lessons. And we also do, in addition to the private lessons, we do different group classes as well. So we have, currently we have a ukulele ensemble that meets.
That sounds fun.
It is really fun. It's so happy. How can you not, like, love the ukulele?
Playing, like, Led Zeppelin or something. You know?
right. actually just yesterday we started a steel pan ensemble as well. We have the Caribbean steel pan, so we're excited to get that new program going. And then we also have a bluegrass ensemble that we started back in the spring and are continuing again this fall. So in addition to the private lessons, we do have all other group opportunities for students to get to play together as well.
Are there what's the process like for getting signed up into these? Do you still have to be, because they are private lessons, is there still like a selection process?
There is. So when a student applies for the lessons, they have to write an essay saying why they, you know, think that they qualify for it. They do have to meet the financial criteria of having the inability to pay for private lessons. And then we also do currently have a waiting list for new students. So that's also kind of can be tough to you know, have to tell kids to wait. But we were we did have 8 students graduate in May, and so we were able to take some new students this fall. So that's been exciting, getting the new kids in, and they're really enthusiastic about the program and getting to start lessons.
Can the kids come in at any time, or do they have to come in the fall?
They can come in at any time if a spot opens up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Michelle Klaus, Assistant Director of the Central Music Academy Downtown. I have two questions that start with the words, what is the diversity? I guess I'll ask the easy one first. What is the diversity at the CMA in terms of instrument selection?
We do have a strong connection with the Central Kentucky Youth Orchestra and their Friends in Music program, as well as the North Limestone Music Works program. So we do have a lot of string instruments, so a lot of violin, viola, cello. We only have one bass student right now, but I think violin is definitely our most popular instrument, followed probably by voice. We have a lot of voice students right now as well. So those are probably our two most popular instruments, but then out of the band instruments, it's probably clarinet is our most popular band instrument. So we do have kind of the wide range of instruments there, but...
Is there anyone there teaching how to bang the drums?
We do. We have a great drum teacher. His name's Justin, and he has worked. We actually do a summer percussion program. It's a week-long camp, and he taught that, and it's all different world percussion instruments. So we do the Caribbean steel pan. We do African drumming. In the past, we've done Chinese drums, and then we also have household items to kind of do a stomp-style program where they're playing on buckets and different things that you can kind of find around the house to just say, you know, even if you don't have access to, you know, a violin, but you still want to make music, there's still ways to make that happen. So
how about diversity, my second more difficult diversity related question, diversity in terms of the kids there, the families that that receive the benefit from CMA? I mean, we can kind of skirt around it, right? When we're talking about private lessons and socioeconomic status, we're talking about a lot of white kids, right, that are getting the privilege of a regular private tutor through their family. Is part of the effort of this for lower income person of color sort of families to be able to have an opportunity to play an instrument?
It definitely, I think, can play into it. You know, we have a pretty diverse group of kids that are coming into our program, and so I think that is definitely something that we you know have reached out to groups of people and have a wide variety of kids that come in for lessons. Yeah.
All right, good. You did just fine with my race-related question. Michelle Klaus, Assistant Director of the Central Music Academy, providing free musical training to financially disadvantaged kids in Lexington, Kentucky. We are going to get to your fundraiser here in a second, but kind of staying on message a little bit, I read that you were part of a program when you were a student at UK, and this is just coming straight off of your bio, right? UK Fusion, right? That it's set on there to bridge the gap between the campus and the city, right?
Right.
Can you explain a little bit more what the issues were there that you found studying that?
When I was a student at UK, I felt like I was kind of in a bubble that, you know, I lived on campus, was often did not have to leave campus, which was, you know, good in some ways and bad in others. And I feel like it was around my junior year that I ended up going to a Midsummer's Night Run. And I remember being downtown and just seeing all these people, and I didn't know any of them. And I realized that Lexington is so much more than just the university's campus. And it was kind of a not eye-opening, but it made me realize that there's a lot more to do in Lexington if and not just on campus. And so when I heard about the UK Fusion program, I was excited. I, you know, have volunteered in the past, but I thought this was a really great way to help make that strengthen that relationship between the university and the city of Lexington. And I ended up going down to the Arboretum, and I had never been to the Arboretum before, and I love being outside, and I just thought that that was such a neat place to be and so close to campus, and I had never been over there before. So it was just a neat way to kind of give back to Lexington. And since I graduated college, I have stayed in Lexington, and just really love the city. And there's just so much to do here, and I think that having that relationship with UK is so critical to Lexington, and that is something that's kind of an important role to make sure. And with the Music Academy, we actually have a really close relationship with the University of Kentucky and with Transy University, and I think having these universities and their students offer so much to our students at the Music Academy, and just being able to be able to see performances and have teachers and you know, the professors over at UK, you know, give master classes and things like that. It just, the possibilities are endless having that connection between our nonprofit and the university.
You were also an intern for the Kentucky Refugee Ministries, correct?
Yes.
A friend of the show,
absolutely.
Friend of the station. Yeah. They have their own show on, I think, every other Tuesday or every Tuesday with my old roommate Dana Lee, and that had to have been even more of an expander of your bubble, right? Because we're not talking about Lexington now; we're talking about the globe,
right?
Is there any sort of I mean, you said ukulele, you said Caribbean style drums. Is there an influence from the international community on the CMA?
Definitely. We have a lot of our teachers are studying here who have lived in other countries. And so that's been a really great, you know, thing for our students to see and kind of help broaden their awareness of music and the world in general. And so I think that's been really great. And yeah, having the Lexington or the Kentucky Refugee Ministries is just a really awesome program. Getting to work with them was a great experience, and just kind of getting to know the people there and to bring in that diversity into Lexington too is just a really neat thing for sure.
You don't play an instrument, correct?
I don't. I have moved the Caribbean steel pans more times than I can count, but I am not actually a musician.
Did you play the recorder?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if we brought in some recorders, we could pound out a wicked duet of Hot Cross Buns.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Oh yeah.
My son's playing with a recorder now. I'm like, put it away, Alex, please. And he's getting good at it, which is entertaining.
Yeah, I guess because you have kids, Alex, and I know they go to a good school around here, right? We don't need to. But what's the I mean, your boys are kind of like, they're rough. They're into sports, taekwondo and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But do you see when they're training on even the recorder, like any kind of the same sort of?
I get what you're saying. Yeah, like I think my older son has a little bit of a ADD kind of hyperactivity thing going on. And it's funny, though, because the school does have a very small music program, but it gets him to sit down and focus. And also, it is an energy outlet as well as an emotional outlet. And he gets into it. He was doing guitar, and that was short-lived, and then now he's playing with the recorder. And he likes that. I think he likes the wind instruments, brass or woodwind, right?
Whatever. Yeah.
Sure. So, yeah. But he likes that genre, I think, because I think it involves him to basically shut up and do something constructive, and I love it, you know. But and that's a great segue. I was going to ask you with the kids. I mean, it is, I'm assuming, an energy, a good outlet for the kids to be into school. You mentioned it a little bit earlier about becoming an extension of the family and whatnot. Do you get that sort of feedback from parents? about, you know, their kids changing from when they start the program to when they graduate or anything?
We do, yeah. We've talked to a lot of parents who have said, you know, my kid has been having troubles in school, you know, their grades were slipping, and, you know, they started in the music program, and, you know, they're becoming more disciplined. And it's not just about learning how to play the instrument, but I think it can be so much more, too. It's, you know, how to learn to play the instrument, that it's something that you've got to do every day, and to take that dedication, so they're learning the discipline and they're getting the confidence then when they get to go out and perform. I think we did a survey of our students, and they said, I think it was 97% of them said that it made them more confident playing their instrument. Sure. And you know, there have been so many studies to prove that music can help with, you know, spatial awareness and, you know, math and critical thinking and things like that as well. So I think that has been, you know, something that has really helped the students, and not only just learning to play, but then so many other skills that kind of come along with that.
Sure. Fine motor skills. I mean, there's obviously the mental stimulation. There's, I saw an interesting study once, using brain MRIs. And I have to tie medicine into something.
I love it. That's why, it's why you're here.
But I mean, yeah, exactly. That's, you know, so, but anyway, so it was, using brain MRIs, and then they had, I forgot what the study setup exactly was, but basically taking a live brain MRI while the person is listening to music.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then they did it while the person was, thinking about the instrument that they played, and like how different parts of the brain, you know, brain lit up. Was really fascinating.
Yeah.
Versus getting a non-musical person into it, and they did the same thing, and it was curious because different parts of the brain lit up, but they both groups had a they both enjoyed music. Uh-huh. They just had a different perspective on it, you know. Uh-huh. And there are other studies that show that people who play instruments, get into instruments, have, you know, lower stress, lower rates of Alzheimer's, dementia when they get older, and all that. So music is it's huge, you know.
It's
amazing.
Just listening to Elias and Anna talk about it in the first hour, and the Suzuki mention, as Ben brought up. You know, there are linguistic components to me, it seems, as well, right? I mean, you're learning to break things down into the smallest form, notes, right? And then string them together across a bar, I guess, as a sentence, you know what I mean? And then you end up kind of telling the story. And I think that probably along the same lines, you know, they talk about, we've had this conversation a few times, but, you know, kids who learn a second language are more apt to learn a third and a fourth. You know, it ends up becoming this big holistic type learning experience, right? And even, you know, and even more so with an instrument, it's like three-dimensional linguistics, right?
Yeah, there's a grammar to it. It can help them with math. There's all sorts. Yeah, we spoke off mic. It is kind of like learning another language, just learning how to play music.
I mean, reading sheet music and stuff, it literally is. It's another written language. I mean, I don't know, you know, what I'm looking at. And yet, a musician will read sheet music, and it doesn't matter what instrument they play, they'll know what that means. You know, it's amazing.
Anna was saying, too, that she had been playing for 10 years by ear before she learned how to read.
And she started at 3 years old or something like that. It's amazing.
But that's that, like, that'd be like a missionary going to South America, right, and learning, because they're inundated with it. You learn how to speak by ear, but you might not know, like, the grammatical portions of it, sure, too, right? There are a lot of cognates to it. Anyway, Michelle Klaus, Assistant Director of the Central Music Academy, excuse me. As promised, we will now discuss the fundraiser that you guys have coming up a week from today. It's CMA Rocks the House next Friday, September 30th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Arts Place. That's downtown, 161 North Mill Street. Tell us about what this fundraiser is, if you will. You've got some very colorful artwork in front of you.
Yeah, so we are doing a silent auction, and we've had noted local artists create artwork out of vinyl records. And so the first one I have here, the record is actually Swan Lake. And so Sarah Campbell created this, and it has feathers on it. It has white feathers that kind of go around the rim of it, and then she is woven fabric through the center of it to kind of create.
So it looks kind of like a 45, and if the outer layer was kind of swan-like and swan-speckled, and then it's got green in maybe the label area, and then maybe a little jewelry where your 45 adapter would be, and then circling around the 45 are lovely white feathers, and Alex is taking a picture.
It's a nice piece of artwork.
Yeah,
there's
it's a very Native cool. American kind of feel to it.
I was going to say, it looks kind of remind me of like a dream catcher kind of a thing.
Right.
You know?
And these are going to be auctioned?
Yes, we're going to be doing a silent auction, and so we have a number of pieces. I think we probably have about 20 pieces altogether that artists have created. We actually have one of the pieces is a working lamp. So they melted the records down, and the top record is the shade of the lamp, and the bottom record is the base of the lamp. That was Mark Shank of the lamp place down there on Main Street. He did that.
And this is all done by one artist?
No, we have multiple artists. Okay. I think we have about 16 different artists who have created artwork for us.
And what's the next one you've got here? It looks a little Van Gogh-ish.
Yes,
from where
so this was Marta Dorton created this one, and she did multi kind of different textiles and things to create the different pieces. It's circles that are kind of yellow on a blue and purple background with a kind
of very watercolor.
I mean, it looks like Starry Night kind
of. It does very much of a Starry Night
feel. The words right out of my mouth.
Right. And then the last, or one of the other ones we have here, Bianca Spriggs created this one. And this is actually a series piece. And so she did three different records, each with kind of a mermaid theme. So the first one is a mermaid, and then the second one is the mermaid kind of spinning, and then the third one is a girl that's kind of coming out of it. So it's a series piece. She did it on the black kind of matte background with
It looks like an outline.
An outline,
drawing,
yes.
If you can picture that. And we'll get Alex to literally take a picture.
Now, will these be...
if I can get my phone to work.
If you win the silent auction, do they come... I mean, they're just a... they're just sort of the record unmounted as is. Are they going to be mounted in any way, or what would be the way to mount them?
You can mount them. They have like picture frames, almost like a shadow box that you can mount them in there. So some of them, we have little like stand holders that it'll hold them up, or you can attach them to the wall. And then some of them, like this fourth piece I have here, it's actually... It has its own frame.
That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It looks kind of lunar there. That's cool.
The title of it is, I'm going to have to make sure I say it correctly, Just Like Heaven. So she took different songs and then used that. She did three of them. So it's actually on like a wood frame. And then
That's nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
It was very well balanced. You see the light. If you look at it from the bottom left up into the top right, it goes light to dark to light to dark in the same way. It's very nice.
So what else is, aside from the silent auction, is going to be happening at the Arts Place on the 30th?
Right. So we'll also have students and teachers performing.
Okay.
And so they will be down there with live music performing. We'll have drinks and hors d'oeuvres. But then the special guest of honor is Dr. George Zack, who is the former conductor of the Lexington Philharmonic Orchestra, and he's also was a founding board member of the Central Music Academy. So we're having him in to honor his work that he's done, not only for CMA, but just for Lexington as a whole. He's been so instrumental in the music community.
Now, it's downtown, so where can people park? Do you have the Arts Place parking lot?
We do.
I always have this question.
Yes, no. First Presbyterian Church has been wonderful and has donated the parking to us, so there will be free parking down there, and it's going to be a great night, and it's going to have food and drinks, and Time Catering is catering the event. They've done it the past 2 years, and they just do a fantastic job. All the food is delicious.
For tickets, you can go to their website, centralmusicacademy.org, or call 859-221-2190. Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us today, Michelle.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful.
Yeah, it was really informative.
Thank you.
Again, it is CMA Rocks the House next Friday, September 30th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Arts Place, 161 North Mill Street. But you can park at First Presbyterian?
Yes.
Is that what the word is? Okay, fantastic. We're going to be right back in a couple of minutes to chit-chat with Dr. Alex, see what he's been up to for the last week or so.
It was very exciting.
Yeah? We're gonna squeeze something out of you. Okay, stay tuned. This is Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community. Welcome back to Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio. We are just wrapping up our Friday show here. I'm Kyle Bigelow. Engineer Wolf is behind the soundboard.
Yeah.
And Dr. Alex is in with us, host, not guest host, co-host, Dr. Alex Estrada.
I'm excited, and then you told me earlier that I'm going to get my station ID card.
You're getting
soon.
A station ID.
Wow, I'm legit now, you know?
Making you official.
It's exciting.
So to finish off the show, we don't have a whole lot of time, but you send me many articles that I neglect. But to kind of explain to us what's happening in the world, there's a the most recent article you sent me was sort of on the state of ISIS and why it's the most powerful terrorist organization in recent memory, at least, if not in history.
Yes, this article was from the New York Times, and essentially they state that ISIS, or ISIL, however you want to refer to them as, they are currently the wealthiest terrorist organization in history. And it's pretty amazing how fast they've grown in such a short time span.
Mm-hmm.
And not only how fast they've grown, but just the impact that they have. And
now, is the wealth all from oil, or do you think they're getting some funds from somewhere? Or
it's not like Hamas or something like that, which is basically a proxy organization, which is funded by Iran and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But a lot of ISIS wealth comes from oil, because they seize these oil-rich areas. There's one oil drilling site in Syria that they have that at its height was producing 30,000 mm-hmm. barrels of oil a day. And, but the greater question is, who's buying it? Who are they selling it to?
Who's buying?
And it's kind of like these shady dealings that they're selling it to all these other countries.
Is it getting laundered so we don't know where it ends up?
It's getting laundered. They're selling it. They're using it for their own infrastructure. What they do is, when they take over a city, they provide vital services to the citizens of that city in exchange for their citizens, pledge of loyalty. And part of that, they have free gas. They have free, free whatever. So it's pretty fascinating. And the broader impact of ISIS is the way they function externally. Like, we saw what happened last week in New York City and whatnot and New Jersey, that they have like these, they're not even lone wolves. These are people that are acting on their own, may or may not have connections to the organization, but they're doing things in their name.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I mean, that's fantastic from a recruiting standpoint. They don't have to do anything, and they're getting their publicity, they're getting the point across there, so it's pretty disturbing.
Well, can't they just be happy with the money? Just make money now.
You know what?
Be legitimate and be nonviolent and just enjoy some money.
How capitalist of you.
I am an American, Kyle. This is how I think.
Well, that's the thing. The
money's
whole,
not important.
Money's not important when you want recognition. And they want to be recognized as a new country, as a new governmental entity. And that the number one thing that we cannot do is give them that legitimacy.
We
can't recognize, because once they're recognized, well, then they have to be respected, and they could be in the UN, and then they get rights.
Isn't that in part why governments, not just ours, refuse to refer to some of these acts as Islamic terrorism? They just don't want to empower that kind of attitude.
I think that is more of a political correctness issue, and they don't want to stigmatize Islam.
Fair enough.
I think that's the main impetus behind that. So, but I mean, and there's people that aren't even Islamic, and they're supporting these guys, or supporting that kind of.
Why do you think that is, if they're not Islamic?
I don't. It just people are angry, and it's misdirected anger. And
misdirected anger towards the United States, or towards Europe, the European Union, OPEC,
all of the above.
Russia.
I mean, just Western culture, or society, or quote unquote the man in general, whatever. you know, and like the things that, you know, that are happening across the country with, you know, police shootings and whatnot, that's not Islamic. But I just think that globally, there's just a lot of pent up anger and frustration in society, and there aren't any outlets, you know. So,
well, what are some of the solutions that people are proposing that you've heard of, or is?
You know, there's a lot of theories. You know, there's a lot of military theorists in history. I mean, from Lawrence of Arabia,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, through, you know, Seven Pillars of Wisdom is a fascinating book, mm-hmm. and you know he wrote that way back when, and it's still applicable today. Then you have Lawrence of Arabia was fascinating because he was more about understanding the culture and mm-hmm. getting the culture and understanding why, you know, where they're coming from, and that makes a lot of sense. But mm-hmm. things weren't nearly as violent back then as they are now, as far as targeting civilian populations. I mean, right. We still had terrorist activity in Tunisia and whatnot, you know, mm-hmm. back in the, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 20s, even. Yeah.
And I know we don't want to bomb the oil, for God's sake.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but you know what? It's like the more I see this, I'm wondering if there's a greater grand strategy of these Middle Eastern countries or whatever, seeing that, hey, wait a minute, the world is going greener, and wait a minute, you know, that they're not, the world isn't as dependent on oil as it used to be. And I'm wondering if they are actually for once thinking long term,
getting to a point, you where know, hey, let's target the oil.
I mean, yeah, you know, and what are we all talking about? Being oil independent.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So, but I mean, last week was real tough for me. You know, I haven't talked about it much on the air, but I was in New York on September 11th, you know, 2001, and then having, you know, these things happening again over there. I mean, it was really sobering to see that.
Well, thank God no one was seriously hurt.
I mean, yeah, it was 27 people hurt in the one big bomb, and like, the other ones were smaller ones. But
how about the guys who stole the luggage?
Oh,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, now it's crazy because we're always taught, right? It doesn't matter where you are. If you see something, say something.
Sure,
something's out of, you know, especially, and you don't even have to be that abreast of current events, you know? So these guys walking around, they see, oh, it's a nice suitcase.
Oh, it's heavy.
Oh, there's a pressure cooker in the suitcase. Well, let's take this out of here and keep the suitcase. What are these guys thinking? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, my God, you know? So, but I think they're actually looking for those guys now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are pictures everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just trippy. And then there was this other theory, you know, were these guys involved in actually planting, you know, the bomb?
Oh, do you think it's like a bluff?
Yeah.
Dazzle, camouflage, do something out in the open?
I read that also. That was another, you know, whatever.
Very, very interesting.
I mean, it's...
Well, I want to ask, as a physician.
Sure.
And do no harm. How do you feel about some of the positions people are taking of don't treat this guy that they caught in New Jersey? And was it the police shot
that.
Him?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
In apprehending?
They caught him in Paterson, New Jersey, which is about 30 or 40 minutes from where I grew up. I know mm-hmm. the area well. And, yeah, he got into a shootout with the police. Police shot him. I'm surprised he didn't kill him. I'm glad they didn't because
right.
now we have – because these guys always either kill themselves or they get caught or they get killed. But yeah. now you have a source of human intelligence. In the military, you call it human. So you have mm-hmm. this source of human intelligence. Now you could see, interrogate him, whatever. You
Absolutely,
know?
Yeah. And you've got plenty of time to do it.
I don't believe in letting him bleed out because that's some of the comments I saw, but
no,
you know.
No.
But I mean, you know, I wouldn't be against waterboarding or advanced navigation techniques.
On that note, and speaking of plenty of time, that's exactly what we don't have for the rest of the show today. We expect Dr. Alex to be back for at least the second hour of the show for the foreseeable future. I should say that we will probably not be live anymore for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
We can discuss that more another time. For right now, stay tuned for Lydia Jacobs and her show, Aging Adventures.
And possibly my mom.
Yeah.
We get on.
Ben's mom called
stick around
in the studio
that.
Trying to tell him that she's going to be on. She's prepared. She's poised.
Yeah, she's ready to go.
So look forward to that.
Jumping at the bit.
There is a piece of paper in front of Alex that is for our 1 year anniversary for WLXU. Could you read that for us, Dr. Alex?
I mean, this is exciting. Time flies when you're having fun. I've been involved with the station for a few months now, and you know, it's something I'm very proud of and very happy being involved with.
You earned that badge, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's coming.
And anyway, so I mean, the 1 year anniversary is coming up, so we're having an event, 1 year anniversary, multiple performances here by some local artists, and it'll be at Maria's Kitchen, 805 North Broadway, Lexington, Kentucky, September 24th, from 6 to 11. So yeah, we invite everybody to come out, celebrate the station's anniversary, and live long and prosper.
Indeed.
Peace and long life.
There you go. Peace and long life.
All right. Stay tuned for Aging Adventures. For Kyle, Ben, and Dr. Alex, this is Ben Bluegrass Bios on Lexington Community Radio.